Intervention Hotline at the University of Maryland. Help Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please, please help me?
All right, welcome back in. Welcome back in. It is 1 o'clock on a Tuesday, which means it is time for the second hour of our show. You are listening to WMUC FM Radio here on 90.5 from College Park. I'm Jack Wynn, your host of Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here on the DMV. All right, so we have the NFL draft in 2 days, which is one of the most exciting parts of the NFL offseason. And it's a time where seemingly every single fan base has hope. It's something that's so beautiful about the NFL is we have seen so many teams turn it around in 1 year that a lot of these fan bases think if we can just draft the right player, that's all we need. If we can just fill this hole, we can get over the top. And obviously that's not true for a lot of teams, and a lot of these bad teams that are picking in the top 10 will be back picking in the top 10 once again. But for some of them, it'll be true. And for some of them, they'll end up in the playoffs. Every year, it seems like there's a worst-to-first team in one of their divisions. So this is huge. Using a first-round pick to draft a cornerstone franchise player is an important decision. It's going to impact the future of your franchise. It's going to determine the culture of your team, the identity you play with, all of that. This is your first round pick, and it's got to be important. So, we are going to do our last mock draft. We did one last week. Not of the top 32, just of the top 10. As much as I would like to do a top 32 mock draft of the entire first round, we simply do not have the time for it, even if I gave my entire two-hour show to it. So we're going to do the top 10, and we'll move through it a little quicker, starting off with the first pick. With the first pick in my mock draft, the Las Vegas Raiders select Indiana quarterback Fernando Mendoza. And this shouldn't surprise anybody. He is the consensus number one. He is the consensus best quarterback in the draft. He is going to be the pick. We've known it for a while. The Raiders have a lot of holes to fill, but quarterback is the biggest one. They traded Geno Smith. They don't really have other options. They did sign Kirk Cousins, but I think he's clearly there to mentor Fernando Mendoza. I think they'll get along well. I think they'll understand each other's play styles. Mendoza is a great athlete. He can move really well in the pocket. He's sneaky mobile. But the most important thing is his accuracy. His ability to recognize a defense, to get in and out of the huddle and keep his team set. He is going to be a high-end game manager in this game. I think his ceiling is somewhere around Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, that Brock Purdy level. I think that's where he'll end up. Maybe he surprised me and gets even better, but I think he can be a top 10 quarterback in this league, and I think that makes the Raiders future contenders whenever he gets there. With the second pick in my mock draft, I have the New York Jets picking David Bailey, edge rusher out of Texas Tech. And I think this one is also telegraphed. This one's not as obvious because Bailey's not as much of a consensus best pass rusher. People have had Arvil Reese in that conversation. There are other great defenders who have been looked at as the second best player. But all the reporting is that the Jets love David Bailey, that people want to see him in New York. And I don't think the Jets are good enough at smoke screens to deflect all of this. There's also not really much need to, unless the Jets are trying to trade out or just cause chaos. Because if we know who the first pick is going to be and it's Mendoza, then the Jets essentially get the first pick of the rest of the draft. And David Bailey seems to be their guy. He is an explosive edge rusher. He is going to put pressure on the quarterback. I think he's going to be a very good player. And he is one of many pieces that the Jets are going to need if they're going to contend. This will shore up their part of their pass rush, at least. They still need more help along the offensive line. They need three or four pieces in the back seven. They need a quarterback. They need a lot. The Jets are far. But David Bailey could be one of those staples that eventually helps them get there. Who am I kidding? It's the Jets. Let's move on. With the third pick, the Arizona Cardinals select Arvel Reese, edge rusher from Ohio State. And I think the Cardinals will be happy about this. There's a lot of smoke right now about them being interested in Jeremiah Love, the running back from Notre Dame. I don't think that's true. I think they're just trying to bait people into trading. This is a no-trades mock draft. We'll talk about possible moves that teams are going to make later on in the show. But Arizona seems desperate to move out. I suppose I understand why. The Cardinals are rebuilding. They have a lot of pieces and holes on their roster to fill and pieces they need. And Arvel Reese is not going to solve all of their problems defensively. So if they can move back, acquire additional picks, acquire additional assets and resources, get more ammunition to rebuild this team more effectively, I think that that's a smart play. Granted, if they sit put or stay put and take Arvel Reese, he can be an impact player immediately. I think he's going to be one of the better players in this draft. He's as good of a pass rusher as David Bailey. He's not as much of an athlete, but he is a better run defender. So there are upsides to both players. I think the Cardinals would be happy with either. Next. Ugh. The music's not going for me, unfortunately. But with the fourth pick, the Tennessee Titans select Jeremiah Love, running back out of Notre Dame. This is another one that has been telegraphed by reports. Everybody knows that the Titans are interested. If the Cardinals do jump on Love, we can see them going in another direction. But it seems like this is what Brian Daboll wants for the Titans. Robert Saleh is the head coach, but we know Dable's in control of the offense. Saleh's confident in some of the pieces that he signed in the offseason on defense. But for Tennessee, I don't really get the pick. I never understand taking a running back in the first round unless you're ready to compete. And the Titans are certainly not ready to compete this upcoming season. They've got, as most of these other teams do, a long way to go. With that being said, I understand the reasoning behind wanting to give Cam Ward a running game. Because for young quarterbacks, when you're under duress a lot or you don't really have a running game that you can turn to take some of the pressure off the defense, take some of the pressure off your receivers, that makes everything a lot harder. All of a sudden, they can focus on blitz packages and mixing up their pass coverage rather than committing to the run. So bringing in Jeremiah Love allows the Titans to open up that offense a bit. He's also a very good receiver, which will help in a very limited receiving room. But we know that running backs don't raise the floor of teams. And for a Titans team that has been trying to get off the ground seemingly for a couple of decades, or for a half decade since Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, that era was over. I don't see a running back doing anything really substantial for Tennessee. Again, he could be a great piece. I would like to see him in a more explosive offense. Maybe Cam Ward takes a huge leap and things work out, but they need help along the offensive line. They need receivers. They need multiple defensive pieces at every level. So in a draft flush with defenders, I don't understand taking a running back. I get he's a great running back. I just don't think it's the right decision. This is what I expect to happen, by the way, not what I would do. Number five, the New York Giants. I think they select Caleb Downs. I told you that they would be going back and forth on Sonny Styles for a while. It seems like Caleb Downs is gaining more momentum with the team, which doesn't surprise me. I think that Caleb Downs would play a Kyle Hamilton-esque role with the Giants, like what Harbaugh had in Baltimore, because Caleb Downs is a very unique talent. He is one of the better safety prospects we've ever seen in the draft. He can play all over the field. He can play, you know, he can play deep safety. He can play box safety. He can play up on the line. You can put him at linebacker. You can put him at slot cornerback. There's a lot that he can do. And for a Giants team that needs a lot of help and hasn't really been great at adjusting to issues throughout the season, bringing in such a versatile and talented player, I think, would be really helpful. Also, their secondary is the biggest issue, in my opinion, at the moment. And so adding a piece back there who can hopefully excel and get his teammates to do better as well would be really helpful. I think Caleb Downs to the Giants would be a really smart pick. Next, the Cleveland Browns. Oh, then we got the music back. All right, fantastic. With the sixth pick, I have the Cleveland Browns selecting Francis Moigoa, the offensive tackle. And I think he's going to be a great player. I don't think getting to the Browns is going to help his career very much. But for a Cleveland team that is just trying to rebuild everything once again, I think that you need to go for structure over flash right here. And a lot of the rumors are that they could go Carnell Tate, one of these receivers. I don't like it. I don't think that's smart. The Browns aren't even sure they're franchise quarterback. You don't want to start a rebuild around a wide receiver. That's just not a very effective way of doing things. You need to go from the inside out, build up your offensive line, your defense, your, you know, secondary, the trenches, the quarterback. Then you can start adding some of these flash pieces. Draft a running back high. Go get a receiver. But Cleveland is so far from contending or competing in any regard. And adding a good offensive lineman should help restart this culture a bit, rebuild this team, at least the offensive line, and just hope to form some sort of identity going forwards into next season. Next. With the seventh pick, the Washington Commanders take Sonny Styles, inside linebacker from Ohio State. And this one, again, I went back and forth on it. I think that the Giants and Commanders at 5 and 7 are in a fun spot, because I think that whoever the Giants don't take at 5, the Commanders will take at 7. They're both really great players, but Sonny Styles is a freak athlete. His combine performance was exceptional. He displayed explosiveness and athleticism that we didn't expect from a player who we knew was reliable in the middle of the field and as a leader. So that kind of combination of things in a prospect or traits in a prospect is huge. And for a Commanders team that desperately needs to rework that defense, who needs to get way younger, they were the oldest team in the league last year and they were one of the worst teams in the league last year. Now you have Jaden Daniels coming back. That offense is going to improve. You need to add another piece to improve that defense too. I think that piece is Sonny Styles. He will be the captain of that defense for a while. I think that if Washington wants to get back to the NFC Championship like they were in Daniels' rookie year, you've got to put the right players around him, and I think Sonny Styles is one of those pieces. Next. The New Orleans Saints with the 8th pick select Mansoor Delane, the cornerback from LSU. I think that this would be really wise and very smart for New Orleans, and I don't think any team would go wrong drafting Delane. He is a great corner. He is an incredibly talented prospect. He's fast. He's quick. He has good hands. His ball tracking is really nice. He's, you know, he deflections following the receiver. A lot of what you want in a cornerback. He's also a dog. He is a physical player. He is not afraid to get in your face. And for a New Orleans team that has also just been desperate for culture and identity and just a little fight, bringing in Delane will, I think, set that tone, at least on the defensive end, and hopefully kickstart a rebuild that has been in very slow progress for a while. New Orleans really botched the last half decade of their franchise's history. They had Drew Brees for the last stage of his career, and they invested a lot of assets in trying to go on one last run. That's fine. Obviously, you're going to have to pay a debt for that eventually, but it's worth it to go all in and commit those future assets for your all-time quarterback. Problem is, they never stopped. And all of a sudden, Derek Carr was their quarterback, or Jameis Winston was their quarterback, and they kept throwing future assets into it, extending players in ways they don't need to, making trades, giving up picks, just unhealthy practice. And so New Orleans is now resetting once again, taking their medicine a bit. Tyler Shuck had a great season last year, set the identity for them. And now you bring in Mansoor Delane to help deal with some of those receivers in the NFC South. Obviously, you've got Tet McMillan, Drake London, Emeka Egbuka, or Chris Godwin over in Tampa Bay. Good receivers. You need help in coverage. So I think it's a good pick. Next. With the 9th pick, the Kansas City Chiefs select Reuben Bain, the edge rusher from Miami. And this is an odd pick, even though I'm confident in it, because Bain was supposed to go top 5. And all of a sudden, there was some minor story about his health, or his arms were too short and whatever. Nobody really paid much attention to it. Then he got into trouble off the field. He had an incident with the cops. He had an incident in his car. He's had past run-ins with the law come up. And he started to slide. I think the Chiefs would pull the trigger on him, because right now the Chiefs are in a unique position where they're picking in the top 10 and they have access to an unbelievably talented player that they otherwise would never have access to when they're usually picking in the late 20s. We also know, based on what we've seen with Kareem Hunt, based on what we've seen with Rashee Rice, based on what we've seen with Tyreek Hill, that Kansas City is not, you know, they're not going to turn a player away because of some off-the-field issues. That's not going to be a huge deterrent for them. Which, like, fine, it's not the best practice. I would hope that some sports karma comes back to bite them somehow. But if the Chiefs are comfortable drafting a player that may have these kinds of issues, then they should absolutely take him. Bain is a great player. He's a really good run defender. He is an electric playmaker on defense. He can come off the edge. He can move inside. He's versatile. He's strong, by the way. He has a good burst, his first step. So he's a very talented player, as I've said about a lot of these guys, maybe all of them. I don't trust him because I don't like my draft picks and guys who are supposed to represent my franchise and be the face of my franchise to have those kinds of off-the-field issues. I want them to be buttoned up. I want them to be, or they're being paid millions of dollars. You know, it's not the most insane thing to ask them to drive safe or not to have a run-in with the cops. He's going to turn into a great player with the Chiefs despite this off-the-field stuff. It just, you know, bothers me when players get away with it. Anyway, then that leaves the last pick in the top 10 and the last pick of this mock draft.
With the 10th pick, the New York Giants select Carnell Tate, wide receiver from Ohio State.
This would be a great pick. I would be off the moon, over the moon, if this ended up playing out this way for New York, because Tate has the ceiling to be one of the best wide receiver twos in the NFL. You pair him with Malik Nabers, you pair him with Mooney and Slayton, all of a sudden that Giants wide receiver core is ready to go. Having two top 10 picks allows the Giants this luxury of drafting a skill position guy. Because I've talked about this with a lot of these teams. If you are not a contender or you're not ready to fight for your division, you should not be drafting skill position players. You should be building your roster. But for the Giants, who just drafted one of those cornerstone pieces at 5, you can afford to take a receiver at 10. A lot of the reporting is that they're, quote, unquote, enamored with Jordan Tyson, the wide receiver from Arizona State. But the consensus across the league is that Carnell Tate's the best receiver in this draft. And he's supposed to be picked much earlier. If he slides past 7, there's a good chance that somebody trades up for him ahead of the Chiefs or ahead of New York. But the only places I see him really going in the top 10 are to the Browns at 6 or the Commanders at 7. And I think both of those teams are going to eventually make the smart choice of prioritizing roster construction and structural building from the inside out rather than the flashy pieces. And when that happens, if he's sitting there at 10 for the Giants, I don't see how they don't take him. The Giants could go offensive line there. There's a guard that people really like, Iupopa. That's not how you pronounce his name. Iupopa and Spencer Fano, the offensive lineman from Arizona. There are a couple really good players, but I think Tate to the Giants at 10 would complement that roster really well and give Jackson Dart now two wide receivers who we can really depend on. So I think that would make the Giants look like a very different team. And by the way, I think that these receivers could really slide. And if it plays out the way that I expect it to, I think that there's a chance that a guy like Jordan Tyson or Mekhi Lemon ends up available for one of these better teams later on in the draft. So that's definitely something to watch. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back in a bit, and we are going to talk about the NBA. The award finalists were released, so we are going to go through those and talk about some of the results that are coming out with you after this.
Community Forklift is a nonprofit secondhand store for home goods and building materials. Shop sustainably for low-cost modern and vintage furniture, art, lumber, hardware, and more for your home or project. Moving out? Consider donating your reusable materials. Community Forklift is located 10 minutes from College Park down Route 1 in Hyattsville. Follow Community Forklift on Instagram to see the latest thrifted finds and visit www.communityforklift.org for salvage store hours.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMD.
Won't you say? Hey, radio listeners. Do you like music? How about business? Come check out the Maryland Music Business Society, Thursdays at 7 in Van Munching Hall. Like us on Facebook at Terp Music for more details. Just to make sure it's out.
Ever wonder why you feel like a complete zombie when your alarm goes off after 8 hours, if you're even lucky enough to get that much sleep? As college students, it feels almost impossible for us to get enough sleep. We're constantly told to get 8 hours, but is that really the magic number? Did you know that throughout the night, your body cycles through periods of light sleep and very deep sleep? Most people's sleep cycles tend to last 90 minutes, so if you aim for 8 hours, your alarm is likely to go off just as you're diving into deeper sleep. Try aiming for 7.5 hours of sleep and see how you feel in the morning. If you feel great, you probably nailed it and found your sleep cycle. If you don't feel perfect just yet, test out an 85 or 95 minute sleep cycle instead. Not only will you feel great in the mornings once you discover your magic number, you'll also add about 30 minutes of valuable time to your day.
All right, welcome back in. We are almost halfway through the second hour here of our show. We've got about 30 minutes left, and it's been a great one so far. We started off recapping the NBA playoffs. We did our mock draft here to start the last hour. I defended my prediction of the Thunder not only winning the title, but becoming an all-time great team. And we reacted to the Dexter Lawrence trade. Now, we move to other important topics. As the NBA award finalists have been released. And I want to start off with the NBA MVP award finalists because I thought it was interesting. I want to talk about each of the players, what their seasons mean. Starting off with Victor Wembanyama, who is the first of three finalists. And he had a historic season. He is one of the best defensive players that we've ever seen. He was the best defender in the league this year. On offense, he is an unstoppable force. He can play outside on the perimeter. He can make threes. He's one of the best rebounders in the league. And his statistics were remarkable. 25 points a game, nearly 12 rebounds a game, over 3 blocks a game, nearly 2 or 3 assists a game. And all of that, by the way, was done in under 30 minutes per game for the season, which makes it even more impressive. Because while he's out on the court, he is as dominant as any of these other guys who fill up the box scores, but he doesn't need to be out there as much to win. Now, I would like to see Wemby out there more, because I think if you're supposed to be one of the most valuable players in the league, I don't exactly understand how you can be on the bench for a third of the game and your team just totally survive. But good for the Spurs. They're probably playing it easy because we know Wemby, his size is an issue. Granted, yeah, he's 7'5". He can move like a guard. It's all great. But he's skinny. His knees are not, and his feet have had issues. All the 7-footers that we've seen in league history have some sort of lower body issue at some point. And so Wemby needs to be very careful with how he takes care of himself. The Spurs, I think, are doing a good job of it. This is an organization that will work with Wemby to protect his value long term. When Tim Duncan was on the team, they kind of reinvented load management to a degree. They were the first team to really do it. When Kawhi got going, it was because he started it with the Spurs, and that's why he was doing it with the Raptors and then the Clippers, because they claimed that it worked. But I think that they're doing the right thing with Wemby. Back to the MVP conversation, though, I got a little derailed talking about his usage rate. I think that when you have a player who is this dominant and the Spurs won 60-plus games and they were great against the Thunder, you have to have him in that finalist conversation. He absolutely deserves to be there. He had a historic season, and Yeah. Okay, next. Nikola Jokic. He averaged near 30-point triple-double again. He was on the 3 seed. He had a great season himself. And as a 3-time MVP award winner, he doesn't really care about this award that much anymore. And he has talked about that with the media. I think it's odd. I think it's a unique choice for a player to, you know, kind of go all in on not wanting an award. We know that his emotions are in Serbia. But from a talent perspective, he has been so dominant once again. And the Nuggets, since they won the title a few years ago, have failed to surround him with really great players. Jamal Murray, of course, is still the same player that he's always been. He's playing well in these playoffs. Obviously, last night was a bit of an indictment. That's not how an MVP is supposed to look when Nikola Jokic is out there missing shot after shot against the Timberwolves. But for 27 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists, all the things that he's done great, the way he controls the pace, the way he dominates games, he's one of the greatest big men that this league has ever seen. And lastly, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think that this is a lock for him to win. He is the defending MVP. He's the defending finals MVP, so he has the narrative on his side. The Thunder have been the best team in the league all year, the best team in the league for the last 2 years, one of the greatest teams ever. So he has history on his side. And not to mention, or dominance on his side, and every single time in NBA history that a player has averaged 30 points per game or more on a team that won 60 or more games, they won the MVP award every time. So I have no reason to believe that'll change with Shai. I think that he is going to continue to be dominant. I think that he's going to prove why he's the MVP of these playoffs, averaging 32-7-4 on the season. Just absurd. Not to mention, Shai is having one of the most efficient seasons for a guard in NBA history. You look at some of these statistics, he's up there with Hakeem Olajuwon and Tim Duncan and Shaquille O'Neal for the most efficient season. And you look at his shooting numbers, he's over 50% from the field, 40% from three. Not to mention, he's an all-NBA level defender. He's just having one of the best seasons by a player that we have seen, at least for a guard. And I think he's going to continue to dominate these playoffs whenever this award is announced. We're going to take one more quick break. This one was not scheduled. There's something to deal with up here in the studio really quickly. We'll be back in literally a minute and a half. Thanks for your patience.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
Ever wonder why you feel like a complete zombie when your alarm goes off after 8 hours, if you're even lucky enough to get that much sleep? As college students, it feels almost impossible for us to get enough sleep. We're constantly told to get 8 hours, but is that really the magic number? Did you know that throughout the night, your body cycles through periods of light sleep and very deep sleep? Most people's sleep cycles tend to last 90 minutes, so if you aim for 8 hours, your alarm is likely to go off just as you're diving into deeper sleep. Try aiming for 7.5 hours of sleep and see how you feel in the morning. If you feel great, you probably nailed it and found your sleep cycle. If you don't feel perfect just yet, test out an 85 or 95 minute sleep cycle instead. Not only will you feel great in the mornings once you discover your magic number, you'll also add about 30 minutes of valuable time to your day.
The The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taz Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May and fall season from August to November.
Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Are you a graduate assistant, research assistant, or teaching assistant at UMD? Are you tired of low pay, long hours, high fees, and no safety net for international students? So are we. The UMD Graduate Labor Union is organizing for collective bargaining rights for graduate workers on campus.
Right now, the administration unilaterally controls our working conditions, but we are fighting to change that. To learn more about graduate labor organizing efforts on campus and what a union can do for you, visit umdgradworkers.org.
Okay, thank you for your patience. We are back, and we are going to start with a conversation that we've talked about a couple times in the show's history, but that came back into question when Bill Simmons made a comment about his voting ballot. And he discussed his process for voting on the Sixth Man of the Year award. And I thought the process was odd. He talked about how he wanted to vote for Jamie Jacquez Jr. initially of the Miami Heat for Sixth Man of the Year. And instead, he watched the play-in games and he saw the Heat lose. And instead, he changed his vote to Keldon Johnson. Now, I have a lot to say about this. I think that this was a bit of a performative effort because I felt Keldon Johnson was clearly the Sixth Man of the Year. And I think that he was really only doing this to try to put attention on the voting processes. But I think it's a little fugazi. And I feel like his whole problem is, look, this is a regular season award. You let me watch the play-in games. I am going to change my ballot as a result. And I don't know if he really did, but he's claiming to. And that puts pressure now on Adam Silver to adjust the rule once again. And this is something that I actually agree with. I think that you need to commit. Either this is a regular season award or it's not. The playing games exist in this weird kind of bubble, and that's not fair. Not every player gets that extra game to either raise or lower your stock. It should be regular season, and they should keep it to it. That's my opinion. I think that there's a lot that needs to be fixed with this process for voting. The 65-game rule needs to be adjusted. Bruce Brown played more games and nearly as many minutes as Victor Wembanyama did. Maybe more minutes. But Bruce Brown isn't eligible for an award this year because he didn't play 20 minutes per game. And Wemby is because he hit the 65-game mark. It's just, it's all odd. It doesn't make sense. I think you just bring it back, make it 55 games, okay? I think that's fair. Or just disband the restrictions entirely. Trust that the voters are going to make the right decision. The voters have handled this for decades in the NBA. This process means a lot to them. When we're looking at players and deciding who gets into the Hall of Fame, when we're deciding which teams were the greatest ever, where does this person's legacy stack against other people's. We depend on these systems for accuracy. And when we start limiting who's even going to be able to be on the ballot, or we prevent history from being told in its full extent, I don't think it's helpful. Luka Doncic had to fight to get to be eligible for awards this year. Granted, it didn't even really work out because he wasn't an MVP finalist, but he had to appeal the NBA to be eligible for awards. Do we think that we could tell the story of this season without mentioning Luka Doncic? Absolutely not. He averaged nearly 40 points per game for a season, for a month. He was the league's leading scorer this year. By the way, one of the first times in nearly a decade that the leading scorer is not an MVP finalist when they made the playoffs. So that is interesting, to say the least. I would have given it to Luka over Jokic and Wemby both. I think Wemby's a more impactful player, but, you know, he's not playing high minutes. His team is really, really good, and Luka's the only real engine on the Lakers. At least that's how he plays. But these processes need to be improved. They simply do. A couple other people I want to shout out, looking at the awards finalists before we move on once again, is Vijay Ejikom was a finalist for Rookie of the Year. And I want to shout out his season because he's had a really good year. And people talk about Cooper Flagg and Konkan Upple a lot for both having historic seasons. But Vijay Ejikom on the Sixers deserves some of that credit as well. Okay. We are going to move into a segment that I call Hot Takes. I am going to give you some hot takes about the NFL, about the draft, how it plays out. And we're going to see how accurate I end up being. First of all, I think that the Cowboys end up trading into the top four for Sonny Styles or David Bailey. Now, there's a lot of trade rumors and a lot of smoke screens that I want to walk you through. We're getting so many reports right before the draft. I think the reports about Arizona and about Tennessee and New York with Jeremiah Love and the trades are all intended to manipulate the media. We have known that Arizona is trying to trade out. We have known that the Titans are interested in Jeremiah Love. And so all of a sudden, the Cardinals release a report today that says, you know, we might just take Jeremiah Love ourselves. And you know what that does? It tells everybody, hey, wait a minute. One of these top defensive guys are going to still be on the board longer than we think. Or we have an opportunity to go get one of these guys because Arizona isn't really set on a player even still before the draft. So it's all mind games, trying to trick everybody. And now the Titans say, oh, well, we want Jeremiah Love a lot. The Cardinals might take him. No big deal. We want Sonny Styles. We'll be completely fine with that. Not important. And I think that's a smokescreen too, because we know they want Jeremiah Love. Sonny Styles would be a good pick for them, but we know they've been dabbling in trades themselves, and if a team is going to want to move up, if you're the Titans and you say you want Styles and you're fine with Love going at three, all of a sudden, if Love goes at three, you're going to want to, a team might want to jump Tennessee to go get Styles and make that trade with Arizona, which would leave Love actually ending up for Tennessee like they've wanted all along. For the Giants at five, they then in response say, you know what? Titans take Sonny Styles, no big deal. We don't even really want Sonny Styles that much. We like Caleb Downs the most. So it's this funny progression of reports. Cardinals say, we want Love. Titans who wanted Love say, yeah, we'll take Styles. Giants who wanted Styles say, eh, we'll do something else as well. All these teams are lying. They're trying to fabricate reports. They're trying to bait other teams to move up. And I think the team that is in prime position for this is the Dallas Cowboys, because Arizona is looking to move back. We know Jerry Jones wants another star defender, wants a star edge rusher. And after trading away Micah Parsons and then acquiring Quinnen Williams, acquiring more talent on defense, we know that the Cowboys like to go big fish hunting. They drafted Micah Parsons, who was one of the best edge rushers in the draft. They drafted CeeDee Lamb, who was one of the best receivers in the draft. They always either end up with one of the best, most talented players, or with they end up reaching on somebody that people don't expect. And if the Cowboys sit tight, I think we may end up getting a reach. But if they move up, I think that it could work out really well. We know the Cowboys' offense is going to be fine and is going to be consistent no matter what. Dak Prescott is that good. CeeDee Lamb is good. Their offensive line is always going to be fine, and that running game is going to be effective as a result. But their defense is what needs to continue to play at a high level so that you can have a good overall team rather than just one that tries to win a shootout every week. I think the Cowboys still need more help in the secondary. I think that their dream scenario would be for Mansoor Delane to somehow slip through the cracks a little bit, and then they can just scoop him up at 12. If that doesn't happen, I don't really know what the Cowboys would be planning on doing. They've got a couple of holes that they need to fill. Another team that may move up is the Kansas City Chiefs. So let's play along with this hypothetical. Let's say that Jeremiah Love goes at 3, Stiles goes at 4. Now the Chiefs are sitting there, and Arvel Reese is still available. Or maybe David Bailey is still available if the Jets take Reese. The Chiefs could offer the 9th pick and their 2nd-round pick to move up with the Giants and go get him. That's something that the Giants have expressed interest in, which would then leave them in a position to take another one of these defenders that fall, maybe one of the receivers, maybe one of the linemen. Plus, you get an additional 2nd-round pick, and we know that John Harbaugh loves acquiring additional assets and resources to rebuild the team. So those are two trades to watch out for. One of my favorite things to see on draft night is the little team logo in the corner change colors, and everyone's excited trying to figure out what's going on, who's moving up for who. I just think it's interesting. Another hot take. I mentioned this during my mock draft. I think that we see a slide on receivers. There are a couple of teams in the top 12 that would be looking at one. Tennessee, I would be surprised if they take one, but they need one. The Giants need a receiver. The Browns need a receiver. The Commanders need a receiver. Even the Saints and Chiefs have been rumored to be looking at receivers. So there are spots for all of these top guys to go. You've got Carnell Tate, the stud out of Ohio State, who's got reliable hands and good footwork. You've got Jordan Tyson, who's the explosive wide receiver with a high ceiling from Arizona State. You've got Mekhi Lemon, who's dynamic and quick. You've got KC Concepcion, who's a bit of a deep threat and is fast with great hands. A lot of good receivers. But this is also a draft, as I've mentioned a couple of times now, that is flush with franchise cornerstones. Offensive linemen that can be starters for an extended period of time. Defensive players that can come in and be impact level players right away. They can be guys who can develop into captains of a defense, great pieces in the secondary, on the defensive line, even the linebackers. This is one of the most well-rounded and deeper drafts that we've seen. There's a lot of top-end talent, and it's about fit. You need to make sure that the player you take is going to fit your vision. And for these receivers, a lot of the time, they don't fit into the vision of a rebuilding team. If you need help and you need to work out your roster, bringing in a playmaker is not really the best way to do it. You need to grow and you need to build from the inside out, as I've said so many times. One hot take that I'm going to throw out there is I wouldn't be shocked if there was a big slide on Jeremiah Love. Now, I do think that as much as I think the Giants are smoke screening about their interest in Love, I really cannot see a world where he slips past 10. So I do think he's a top 10 pick. But it seems like he's a lock now to go in the top 5. And I just don't understand. I know Jeremiah Love is that good of a player, but all of these teams drafting him need so much more help. The Titans need so much more than a running back. The Cardinals definitely need more than a running back. The Giants have running backs established. I could see a team maybe trading up for him if he gets past that first five. But there is a world where the Cardinals say, you know what, never mind. We weren't that interested in Jeremiah Love. There is a world where the Titans say, Sonny Styles is a great prospect. We do need a defensive cornerstone and defensive piece on that side of the ball. And then pass on Jeremiah Love. And the Giants say, we'll do the same as well and take Caleb Downs. That is not an unrealistic scenario, and if it happens, Jeremiah Love is going to slip. There are not a lot of teams behind the Giants that need a running back. I would say the Chiefs, but they just signed Kenneth Walker, so there's not real much benefit to going out and getting Love anymore. I don't know. I think that the draft is always interesting to see play out because there are always guys that slide. As I mentioned earlier during my mock draft, Reuben Bain is going to be a player to watch because he is one of the five best players in the draft, but his off-the-field issues have drug him down. So some of these players' names are going to be called early. Some of them are going to have to wait. Either way, they're going to have to try to be great. We're going to take one more quick break. We've got about 10 minutes left in our show here. Then we'll come back, wrap things up with you after this.
The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taos Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May and fall season from August to November.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars.
Sign up for the weekly bike rides every Tuesday around College Park. Don't have a bike? Just rent it from the campus bike shop. Spending time outdoors has great benefits. It raises your vitamin D levels, it improves concentration and focus, helps you recover from injury and stress, and it may even mean more smiles throughout the day. To get more information, log on to crs.umd/Maryland Adventure Program. Hashtag stay active.
I can tell you about Leif Erickson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American. Me and my friends.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name? You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
All right, we've got 7 minutes exactly here left in our show. And it's been a good one. We've talked about the NBA, the playoffs. We've talked about the big trades in the NFL. We've gotten in-depth about the draft coming up tomorrow. And now we're going to talk about some free agency news. Because we're going to play a game that I call... Well, we're going to just talk about... It's not really a game. We're just going to talk about three contracts. One of them's done. One of them's... I can't think of anything that rhymes with done. One player who had his contract signed. One player who's on a team's mind. And another player... Who lies? I don't know. I should have thought more about the creative game segment name before I came on the air today. But, point is, we're talking about three players with contract news. Starting with Brandon Aubrey, who signed a 4-year extension with the Dallas Cowboys. And I thought this was a fantastic deal. They gave him a lot of money. A lot of money. But I think he deserves it. He gives you a premium in that position that we have never seen in the history of the NFL. They can roll him out from the 50-yard line and be in field goal range. So having that kind of talent at the kicker position means that when you start drives, touchbacks start at the 35. You are a little more than a first down away from being in field goal range every time you take the field. That is a huge advantage that the Cowboys now have over these other teams by securing Brandon Aubrey. So I think that it was a great decision. It's one that the Jaguars are going to have to make in a couple of years if Cam Little continues to progress at this rate. but it is way harder to find a player like Brandon Aubrey than it is to find a player like pretty much any other non-quarterback. So, happy for him to get that money. There was a story, by the way, after he signed the deal. His girlfriend and him were watching a game. This is before he's played in the NFL. And a kicker missed a field goal. And she looked at him and said, "You can make that." And he said, "You know what? I probably could make that." And he went out, started practicing, made the Cowboys, and is now the highest paid kicker in the league. So, a really cool story for Brandon Aubrey. Next, a player that is on a team's mind, Odell Beckham Jr. This one warms my heart. And he worked out with the Giants this week. And I would be absolutely elated if he finds his way home and signs with New York. I think at this point, look, it's not about what he can bring to the team. It's not about his talent. He's older now. He's not as quick. His, you know, footwork and his hands are not what they used to be. But he's played with John Harbaugh. He's won a Super Bowl. He's handled the media pressure in New York. He's been a young, talented player. And for a Giants team that is so young, has so many guys trying to figure out their role in the league and their role with this franchise, having that kind of veteran presence, I think, would be helpful. Even if he just is there for training camp and doesn't make the cut for the actual roster, I think that having him there for the process as a steady hand will be beneficial. And it's kind of a nice and poetic arc for his career, because when he left the Giants, he was a bit of a diva. He was dramatic. He had issues on radio shows, making big comments and quotes. But now he's going to hopefully come back and take on the exact opposite role of calming things in the locker room. Not to mention, it doesn't surprise me that the Giants are doing all of this right after trading Dexter Lawrence. Feels a bit like, jiggling keys in front of a cat to try to distract them and, you know, look, oh yeah, we traded our best defensive player, but oh look, we might bring back Odell, and everyone's falling for it, and yes, I'm falling for it too. I want Odell to come back. All right, last, we've got about 2 minutes, and it's Aaron Rodgers. The Steelers reportedly are not basing their draft decision off of Aaron Rodgers, which is good. I really don't get why the Steelers are still playing this game with him. Rodgers, I suppose, is slightly better than what they have right now at quarterback, but there are options in the draft you can go get. I just, bringing him in, ruining that locker room when you're trying to rebuild, I think it throws off their entire vision and their entire plan. Mike Tomlin was that coach for nearly 2 decades. You don't shift that entire culture away just to bring back the quarterback that was toxic in the locker room and blew things up. I don't think it's a good idea. I think Mike McCarthy needs to have his own system, needs to build things out himself, and the Steelers should take their medicine, restart. I wouldn't be surprised if TJ Watt entered trade conversations. Some of these other veteran great defenders or players that the Steelers have been holding on to, I think it's time for them to go. This needs to be a new era in Pittsburgh. The AFC North, by the way, as a whole, is just kind of falling apart a bit. The Ravens, after losing Harbaugh, are scrambling to try to fix this roster around Lamar Jackson. The Bengals have all of their money tied up with 4 players. The Steelers remain in quarterback purgatory, and the Browns are still the Browns. So I don't really know who's going to win that division. That'll be an interesting thing to think out and predict later on in the offseason. But what both of these teams do in the draft, I think, will be very telling. I wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers take one of these quarterbacks later on in the mid rounds just to get some competition. I don't think after Mendoza there's a quarterback worth taking in the first round. People like Ty Simpson out of Alabama. I don't think he's good enough to warrant a first round pick, but if you're a team that does, you should take him in the first round because then you get that fifth year option. So we'll see what the Steelers do. They've got choices. I don't think Aaron Rodgers should be a part of them. We'll see how it plays out. All right. That's our show today. Thank you so much for tuning in. We covered a wide range of bases. Very excited to see how the NBA playoffs continue to go and what happens in the NFL draft this week. We will recap all of it next week. I'm already looking forward to the episode.